This is the country session, so if you're looking for jazz, that's not here, although it's a bit of a crossover, so, you know, wahoo. Okay, our first speaker is Tom Diamant?
Diamant.
Diamant, okay, which is how he pronounces it. And now I will pronounce it. Tom's been in the record industry for over 38 years. The past 20, he's been vice president and general manager of R. Hooley Records. He's one of the founding board members and officers of the R. Hooley Foundation, where he works in digital as the digital archiving director of R. Hooley Foundation's Strachwitz Frontera Encyclopedia of Mexican and Mexican-American Recordings. Prior to his work at R. Hooley, Tom was co-owner of Kaleidoscope Records, which released albums by such groups as David Grisman, Quintet, Kate Wolfe, The Good Old Persons, oh, I feel I'm getting to be one of those, The Bobs, one of my favorite a cappella groups, and others. One of his projects there was rescuing rare acetate radio transcriptions of Bob Wills and his Texas Playboys from the 1940s and reissuing them on a series of 10 albums for Rhino, correct?
Kaleidoscope,
sorry about that. Since 1976, he's hosted the radio show Panhandle Country on station KPFA-FM in Berkeley, California. The show features Western Swing, Honky Tonk, Cajun, and Bluegrass, both recorded and live. I love Bob Wills. I'm really looking forward to hearing this. He's getting revived more and more. One of my favorite groups is Hot Club of Cowtown, which just put out a tribute to Wills, which is interesting because they don't have a piano and they don't have some of the brass instruments in there. So anyway, Tom.
Ooh. Good. Yes, thank you very much. And judging from the comment about whether this was the country or the jazz segment, a bunch of you laughed, which you all know that Bob Wills never considered himself a country musician. His band members have told me they couldn't play country music if they even tried. They were pop musicians, they were swing musicians, they were jazz musicians, they were a dance band. Even though Bob Wills started as a Texas fiddler, his dad was a Texas fiddler, he started off playing ranch dances, but by the time he moved to California in 1943, he had one of the top dance bands in the West, breaking attendance records all over the West Coast, Santa Monica Pier. He broke the attendance records there. He had moved to California in 1943, hoping to start a tour circuit on the West Coast that was similar to the one that he had in Oklahoma, Texas, and the Southwest. Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys, back in the 1930s, in the glory days, in the early 40s, they were a horn-based band, even though there was a fiddle and a steel guitar, as Western swing tradition had it. It was a horn band. The horns were out front. They had section work as good as any of the swing bands of the era. They did jazz and blues and a few fiddle tunes and regional tunes thrown in, but they were a dance band. And when he came out here in 1943, even in 1944, he put together a 22-piece band, which had 8 or 12 horns in it. However, the big band era was over after World War II, and all the big band leaders, or most of them, cut down to smaller bands. And Bob Wills was no exception. He cut it all back to one trumpet player, Alex Brashear. And the section work that the horns used to do, he put the guitars more up front, the electric guitars, the steel guitar, the piano and the fiddle, and later an electric mandolin. They took over the section work. They took over the jazz style section work. And he did these recordings for the Tiffany Music Company, and no better place is there to hear that section work. Crank that music up. A little louder, please. Come on. This is dance music. I can be able to get into
this. Well, here we all are, coming away kind of fast. Thank you.
Tiffany Music Company was formed in 1945 by band leader Bob Wills, songwriter Cliff Sundin, and Cliff Sundin is the main character in this story, and radio personality Cliff Johnson, known on the air as Cactus Jack. Songwriter Cliff Sundin, who apparently financed much of the deal, had three songs of his recorded by Bob Wills on the Columbia label in 1945, and his interest in the enterprise, other than making money, was also to have more of his songs recorded by Bob Wills. Cactus Jack was a radio DJ who discovered that there was an audience for Western music in the San Francisco Bay Area and had developed a radio personality of Cactus Jack to cater to it. The idea of the Tiffany transcriptions was to have a weekly radio show, a transcribed radio show that could be syndicated throughout the United States of Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys. The service was available to stations starting in 1947, and the company was really ready for success. They had printed hundreds of transcription labels, ready to be applied to discs when they were ordered. Hundreds of this famous Tiffany transcription flyer, one of which is in the silent auction. You can own one of these. And address labels, stationery, everything, graphics, everything to make a success, to sell to hundreds of stations nationwide. Cactus Jack had the radio expertise to get it out. Bob Wills was the touring star who was going to continue his popularity. And Cliff was going to write more songs so that Bob Wills would record them. But it was not to be. The Tiffany Music Company stopped distributing to stations in 1949. As far as we know, there were 13 to 14 recording sessions between 1946 and 1947. The 1946 sessions were recorded at Universal Studios in the basement of the Mark Hopkins Hotel at the top of the steep Knob Hill in San Francisco. Fiddler Joe Hawley recalls, "The only problem was getting that big, long bus to the top of Knob Hill. It took some real maneuvering to find a suitable route over those narrow, hilly streets." And I don't know if that was the reason, but in 1947, all the sessions were held at Sound Recorders, 421 Powell Street at the foot of Knob Hill. The sessions were usually held on Monday, a day where they weren't touring and performing, but they weren't like normal recording sessions. They were far more casual. Very little planning was involved. Arrangements were made up on the spot. It was very loose, it was very raw, and it was very energetic. They were cut onto 16-inch acetate discs, that's what the masters were, going 33 and a third, three or four songs per disc, which made it a little easier to go over that 3-minute limitation of a commercial 10-inch 78. So a lot of the songs are over 3 minutes, a bunch of them are over four, and St. Louis Blues Part 2 is 5 minutes and 55 seconds, so they really got to stretch out. The songs ranged from Bob Wills hits, Western swing standards, top hits of the day, sentimental ballads, Western movie cowboy songs, Texas fiddle tunes, blues, and hot swing instrumentals. And they were loose, and they were raw, and they were very well recorded. The band members recall, steel player Herb Remington said, "I remember just how relaxed and off the cuff the mood of the band was each time we recorded the Tiffany transcriptions. We were usually between tours when we did them, periods when we're not in a big rush, and we were rested and just having fun. You can feel it when you listen." Electric mandolin player Tiny Moore says, "This is the way the Bob Wills band sounded on many dances we played. In not trying to get the perfect take, we had a relaxed yet driving quality that is hard to get on record. I don't remember any pressure at all during those sessions. It was fun."
The Spanish Fandango, I long for the charms of your sweet loving arms. So come, let's begin the Spanish Fandango. Hold me once more while we glide across the floor. I stumble, I got my tongue hung. That's awful. Can't even read.
Oh, Thomas.
My sweet senorita, my own sweet Chiquita, let's dance once again the Spanish Fandango. And that wasn't my fault that time.
Well, boys, I didn't like her start.
A rare picture of a recording session, Tiffany recording session at Sound Recorders, September 6, 1947. Bob must be saying something interesting because all eyes are on fiddler Bob Wills in this picture. I really like this picture. They recorded 458 individual tracks, including incomplete takes, false starts, intros, outros, mic checks, etc. 360 complete songs were recorded onto the masters, more than any more songs than for any other label. Of these, 211 were issued on the original transcription discs. They were pressed onto these vinyl, 16-inch vinyl discs, and they were considered two records, the way they were labeled. This is record one, as it says on the label, and this is record two, as it says on the label. There were only around 50 of these sets ever manufactured. If you see one on eBay, there was one of those on eBay. If you see it on eBay, grab it. From those 16-inch masters, they assembled transcription discs. They put tunes together. There was no only music was recorded. There was no talking, no introductions. And then songs were selected and assembled. These were pressed on both black and red vinyl. And there are generally four or five songs to a side. They issued 24 of these discs, or they issued 26 of these discs, or 52 records. Only 24 of them were ever distributed. The transcription radio show, since there were no intros or outros, oh, and these were not designed to play all the way through, by the way. There was a locked groove at the end of each song, so you couldn't even play them all the way through. It would stop right at the end of each song. They were supplied to radio stations with a script called a continuity, and the radio station was to hire its local announcer and sell local advertising, so it would give it a local feel. You would read from the script would say, play record two, track B, after saying these words from the script, and that way you could take the transcription discs, shuffle the tunes, and have an infinite number of radio shows. They printed up hundreds and hundreds of different scenarios for these scripts. Each show started out with the intro Texas Playboy theme and ended with the outro theme as well. The Texas Playboy theme is based on Georgia Tom Dorsey's Hokum song, Eagle Ridin' Papa. Carrie Janelle, who's sitting right there, in his book Milton Brown and the Founding of Western Swing, gives a really good history of the theme song from its original recording by Georgia Tom Dorsey to the famous Hokum Boys recording, which he points out is probably the version that the Aladdin Laddies, who were the first people to turn it into a theme, used, and then the Lightcrust Doughboys used it, and then Bob Wills and his Texas Playboys used it. Read Carrie's book. He describes it very well, and it's a real good book about Western Swing. And also, speaking of that, Western Swing gained a lot and took a lot of material from Hokum music. And there's going to be a talk here on Hokum music on Friday at 1:45 by Roberta Frun-Schwartz. So go and see that. I'm really excited to see that. In 1948, there was a plan for B.F. Goodrich-sponsored Bob Wills show based on the Tiffany transcriptions with Bob Wills and Cactus Jack hosting. But it didn't look like it ever got off the ground because we found a bunch of these transcription discs and they had never been sent out. But it does give a good idea what one of these shows sounded like. So I'm going to play you a little portion of one of these shows. This is the way the Tiffany show would have sounded like, except it would have had a local announcer instead of Bob Wills and Cactus Jack. But I also want to go and start off by just playing the famous Hokum Boys with a little bit of Eagle Ridin' Papa and then the Texas Playboys theme, and you can hear where it came from.
Listen, everybody from near and far, you want to know just who we are.
Eagle Ridin' Papa from Tennessee.
Now, if you like the way we play, listen while we try to say.
Eagle Ridin' Papa from Tennessee.
Everybody from near and far, if you want to know who we are,
we're the Texas Playboys from the Lone Star State.
If you like the way we play, listen while we try to say,
we're the Texas Playboys from the Lone Star State.
And all day long, gonna sing this song.
No, Joe.
If you get this song,
of course you will.
You can't go wrong. And how
make things bright, make you happy from morn till night. We're the Texas Playboys from the Lost Highway.
Well, how do you do, friends? Yes, sir, Tommy Duncan, myself, Bob Wills, and all the Texas Playboys here to entertain you today. But believe it or not, here's old Cactus Jack with me again. Jack, how you feeling today?
Well, Bob, I'm feeling mighty fine, raring to go, too. And, you know, well, I think we're going to have ourselves a lot of fun today. What kind of a program we got coming up for this morning?
Well, we've got a lot of old ones and some new ones, believe it or not, Jack.
Well, it seems to me we're going to have a mighty fine program of all of our neighbors' favorite Bob Wills tunes.
Yowza.
And, you know, I think there's a fella nudging us away from this microphone.
Uh-oh.
It's that local B.F. Goodrich announcer.
Bless his heart. Come in.
What, of course, really made these transcriptions great was the band. Bob Wills had a number of different bands and a number of different styles within the Western swing genre. This band was one of the hottest he ever had in terms of the electric instruments and the piano player and the steel trumpet player. Everybody was cooking. They were young and they were energetic, and I'm going to talk about a few of them. There are way too many to go through the whole thing. Of course, there was Bob. Bob played the fiddle, but not the jazz parts. He was an old-time hoedown Texas fiddler. He sang, he hollered, he yelled, he talked over the solos, he called out the band members, and he did all of those things that kind of made him Bob Wills. And then there was his vocalist, Tommy Duncan, who had been with Bob Wills since the very beginning, since his very first recordings. And Tommy, his very last recordings were with Bob Wills. He quit in 1948. His very last recordings were with the Tiffany Transcription Company. He was a crooner, he was a jazz singer, and he loved horses.
Why don't you show it to me, Dinah? With the Dixie-eyed glazing, I would love to sit and gaze in to the eyes of Dinah Lee. Now every little line, why do I shake with pride? Because my Dinah might change your mind about me. Deep, need a little bit Dinah. If you wanted to do China, I would hop an ocean liner just to be with Dinah Lee.
How many times have you seen this pose with some suave jazz singer or jazz pianist leaning against the piano? I mean, these guys thought and believed they were pop musicians. He just happens to have a cowboy hat, a Western shirt, and a cowboy boots on, like any business person from Texas would have. And that was just the way they dressed. But they weren't playing country music. Tiny Moore, well, Electric Manlet, let him tell the story.
We started out on the road about 2 o'clock in the morning or so, and on the way to Houston, the first little town was Beaumont. It's not a little town, but there happened to be a sandwich stand. We called them pig stands back in those days because they made a barbecued pig sandwich. And we decided that we'd better, we went past the place and turned around and decided we'd better get a cup of coffee and a sandwich before going on to Houston. Went in, and Bob Wills and Tommy Duncan and Billy Jack Wills were in the restaurant eating after that dance that they played in Port Arthur. Richard just barely knew Bob, and he got to talking to him and asked if he might be interested in listening to an electric mandolin player. Well, Bob had never heard an electric mandolin, I don't suppose. And he called me over, and we talked, and said, "Do you happen to have it with you?" Of course I did. So I got the little amplifier and set it up on the counter in this little place. This is 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And the girl, I can just almost see the waitress plugging it in for me in back of the counter. And sat on the stool, played strictly by myself, and auditioned for him. And I don't even remember what I played. I played several tunes, and he hired me right there. Kind of a funny thing happened the next day. I went to Johnny Lee Wills at the time, had the daily broadcast there in Tulsa, and Richard and I went down to the broadcast at 12:30 at noon, and after the broadcast, we went over to talk to Johnny Lee and introduced ourselves, and I said, yeah, I saw Bob last night. As a matter of fact, he hired me. I'm going to go to work with him Friday. John said, oh, huh? I said, what do you play? I said, mandolin. He said, oh, I says, was Bob drinking?
On piano during these sessions was Millard Kelso, and also the piano and the drums and the bass just really had a solid rhythm section here that really drove this band. Kelso was on the piano, and on the jazz fiddle was Joe Holly, the left-handed fiddle player, and always looked great when Bob playing right hand with the cigar in his mouth, of course. And Joe Holly playing left-handed fiddle always struck a good pose. Here's a little bit of Millard Kelso doing a solo into Joe Holly's solo.
Get it, Kelso.
You know, a lot of people don't like Bob Wills hollering, yelling, screaming during the solos. Why doesn't he shut up so I can hear the solo? But every one of those band members would have told you that they played hotter, they played better when Bob hollered. He was a great band leader. Not all these guys were in the Tiffany transcriptions, but this guy there, Herb Remington, he's the steel guitar player. In the later sessions, they had three guitar players, Noel Boggs, Roy Honeycutt, and Herb Remington. Johnny Coviella, drummer there, is still playing drums, still living in San Jose, California, and will come to some gigs and sit in playing drums. And this big guy right here is Lester Junior Bernard was the guitar player who just said it all. He had a raw, crazy, wild style of playing. Distorted tone, prototype rock and roller in his tone. He had a big old blonde Epiphone guitar, and I think many people who are attracted to these sessions today do it because of Junior Bernard. So I'm going to play a little clip here from an unissued version of South. This is a great version of the tune South that lasted so long it goes crashing into the center of the acetate disc and abruptly ends, but we're not going to hear that part. So it's going to start with a little bit of section work with Eldon Shamlin and Tiny Moore. Then Junior's going to come in with this insanely bizarre solo. And then Herb Remington's going to say, well, gosh, if you're going to do something as crazy as that, I better follow it with something good, too.
Yeah!
In 1949, things were not going real well for the Tiffany Transcription Company, Tiffany Music Company. There was a disagreement, and Cactus Jack, Cliff Johnson, was kicked out of the company. Nancy tells Cliff Sundin's granddaughter, who later inherited the Tiffany Music Company, said Cactus Jack was caught selling transcriptions and or playing them on the air and not paying Tiffany, his partners in the Tiffany Music Company. In an agreement at a board of directors meeting in 1949, Cactus Jack had to pay the Tiffany Music Company $500 for having used the transcriptions, and he got booted out of the company. This left Cliff Sundin and Bob Wills as the sole owners of the company. But it appears they weren't doing well syndicating the show. There's documentation of at least 34 stations that they were able to syndicate to. They might have done more, it's unknown, but that was not enough to keep the company going, and things were not going well. In 19, they stopped distributing the transcriptions in 1949, and in 1953, Bob Wills turned his rights over to Cliff Sundin in exchange for $1 and a forgiveness of a debt that Bob Wills had incurred with Cliff Sundin. This ended the active life of the Tiffany Music Company. Cliff Sundin packed up everything, put it in the basement of his house on School Street in Oakland, California, where it sat for many years. Cliff didn't give up music. He was a songwriter. He wrote hundreds and hundreds of songs. But he made his money as a projectionist at one of the local Oakland burlesque houses, where they showed movies between the shows. He never forgot about the music and would play it around his house all the time, and his granddaughter told me it was terribly embarrassing as a teenager for her to bring her friends over there because there was that awful Bob Wills music playing all the time in the house. But he didn't try to revive the company or do anything with the recordings. The collectors kind of started, you know, finding tapes of these and passed them around, but it kind of moved into the legendary status. In 1976, when Charles Townsend wrote his book, San Antonio Rose, The Life and Times of Bob Wills, it included a discography put together by the late Bob Pinson. And Bob Pinson, he was the head of the Country Music Foundation archive. He listed all the recordings that were on the 26 press discs, but none of the outtakes, none of the unissued material. He had no access to it. And at the bottom of the discography, it says, quote, all efforts to secure the necessary information about the entire catalog of Tiffany recordings from the possessor of these data have been in vain. It seems that the Tiffany transcription project turned out to be a bad experience for Cliff Sundin, and he just didn't want to revisit it. Sometime around 1976, record store clerk John Breckow was working in a local Los Angeles record store when a woman came in with a complete set of the pressed discs. He immediately realized what they were. He bought them from her and put together this album, which he released. It had 20 selections. It had the wrong dates. It didn't have the right information or the right recording information on it, but it had the right personnel listed, and it was met by quite a lot of success. The dubs are a little slow on this recording, by the way, if you listen to it. They weren't quite done at the right speed, but it was so successful that Cliff Sundin, the owner of the Tiffany Music Company, heard about it and started to sue John Breckow. Well, John got on the phone with Cliff and said, you don't want to sue me. You want to get this material out. So they collaborated on this album on the Lariat label that came out in 1977. Again, it didn't have the correct information, and apparently Breckow, who put it together, did not have access to the unissued material either. It's all from the press transcription discs. It was received incredibly well by reviewers and the buying public. But however, according to Sundin's granddaughter, Nancy Tells, there was a problem. Breckow had handled all the manufacturing and production, and when it ran out of stock, apparently Cliff Sundin could not get a hold of John Breckow to get any more recordings. And also, there was another record label called Lariat Records that had contacted them and said, you can't use our name. So once again, Sundin's dreams for the Tiffany transcriptions fell through, and he withdrew from the project. In 1976, Kaleidoscope Records was founded by Jeff Alexson and myself in the San Francisco Bay Area. We had put out contemporary recordings by the David Grisman Quintet, and Kate Wolfe But we knew about the Tiffany transcriptions. Our office was in El Cerrito, just north of Oakland, and we really wanted to put that material out. We were both Bob Wills fans. On my radio show, I had been playing Bob Wills music all the time, including cassette tapes of the unissued the transcriptions that had not been put out on LP. And so we started talking to them, to Cliff. Cliff was kind of a curmudgeon, ornery kind of guy, and it was through the persistent and persuasive conversations with my partner Jeff Alexson that Cliff even continued talking to us. Well, then Cliff got sick, and we started talking to his granddaughter Nancy Tells, and then Cliff got well, and we had to start all over again. And then Cliff passed away, and the estate went into probate. Even though the will clearly stated Nancy Tells was going to be the owner of this material, she was unable to do anything until it came out of probate. So finally, after 2 years of this, on July 7th, 1982, a licensing agreement between Kaleidoscope Records and Nancy Tells to release the Tiffany transcriptions was signed. And once again, I got to give Jeff the credit. I would have never had the patience for this. Jeff just kept it up and kept it going, and he was the guy who really, really made it so we could put this material out. And we had only licensed this material. We did not buy the rights to it. We only licensed it. We knew we had licensed something really special, but we had no idea what we were going to stumble into when we, Jeff and I and Nancy Tells, crawled into this kind of dirt floor, crawl space basement in schools on School Street in Oakland, California. Sundin was a rat pack. Pack rat. He wasn't a rat pack. He was a pack rat. That would have been interesting. As we crawled through the, as we went to that crawl space, we found box after box of pressed transcription discs, thousands of unused printed labels. One of those labels is in the silent auction. You could be a real owner of that. We found lots of flyers, tons and tons of scripts, continuity, stationery, receipts, original artworks, advertising graphics, canceled checks written to Bob Wills, all sorts of business records, all this, much of what you've seen here today. And as we were going through the basement, I was saying, Jeff, my gosh, look at this. And he was saying, Tom, look at this. And Nancy was saying, oh, my gosh, here's a Christmas card I made for Granddad 20 years ago. I mean, he apparently never threw out anything. And it was a real treasure trove. Upstairs in a closet were the original acetate masters. He knew that they were not to be kept in a basement. And more business records and photos. Also many reels of tapes of the many songs he had written. He had also taped radio shows off the air where they played his songs or played some of the Bob Wills songs that he had written. It was a really true find, and we were just overwhelmed at what we had there. We decided we had to figure out how to put these out. A complete chronological collection was, we didn't even think about doing that. There's 360 songs. It would have been difficult listening at the best if you were a Bob Wills fanatic. We decided we'd put out the cream of the crop. We would do the best. We wanted people who had never heard of Bob Wills, never heard of Western Swing, to drop the needle down on that LP and be blown away by it. We sequenced them like we thought Bob Wills would do or put together a show. And we just chose, and we also steered towards the hot, jazzy things and less of the sentimental, because that's what we are very interested in doing. Fortunately, many of the musicians were alive. We interviewed them. Tiny Moore and his wife, Dean McKinney Moore, who were both in the band at the time, lived not far away in Sacramento. They were great inspirations to us, as was Johnny Caviella down in San Jose. They gave us advice, and they gave us a real feeling of what it was to live through those times. Oakland staff photographer Robert Stinnett had gone out in 48 to Maple Hall in San Pablo and had photographed many pictures of Bob Wills performing live with the Tiffany Band, some of which you've seen here today. We were able to get those photographs and use them for album covers. And each album we put out had one side was one part of the notes was a remembrance by one of the Playboys, and one was notes that we put of a more historical interest. Using all these graphics, the original graphic, our graphic artist at the time, Elizabeth Weil, put together a series of beautiful album covers that really reflected what was on the music. And that, with the complete discographical information, was the first release of the Tiffany transcriptions that really had it all in it. Bob Stinnett just took these pictures, and Bob knew that he was taken.
Come in, Noah. That is an old bar. There's still guitar.
Backstage.
Much it really means.
I'll
I'm so
more.
Glad to be.
Well, hooray, yeah.
Yow's free. Well, welcome, stream. Dear to me.
All right.
Where I can lose.
What are you about
photos to in the auction, too.
My bass and street blue. I'm Connie.
We managed to release 9 albums. Volume 1 through 9, and one of our For Collectors Only series, which was going to be our next series of albums. Dean and Evelyn McKinney were starting to perform again, and they wanted something to sell, so we put together a McKinney Sisters cassette, which we later released on CD. Many people call that Volume 10. It was never considered Volume 10. There was a Volume 10. We had gotten test pressings. It was going to be a picture disc. All these photos were hand-tinted, by the way. This is pre-Photoshop days. We were going to have Bob Wills' picture on one side, Tommy Duncan on the other side. We got test pressings made for it, but it was not to be. Kaleidoscope Records was sold to Rhino Records on September 29th, 1992. Rhino got all of the material that we had put out. Rhino knew about us because they had licensed 4 songs from the Tiffany Transcriptions for their Texas Shape record that they had released. All of the material, including the artwork and the master tapes for the Volume 10, went to Rhino Records, and that ended the Kaleidoscope Records part of the deal. Rhino, again, did not purchase the Tiffany Transcriptions, only our rights to license them, which was expiring by 1992. Rhino was then sold to Warner Brothers, and Warner's was just sold to someone else last week. Rhino never issued Volume 10, and we're not sure why they never issued Volume 10, and that was going to be the end of the story. So this gentleman here, around 20 minutes ago, handed me the master tapes to the unissued Volume 10, which is in the Rhino vaults. And this story has been extended today because it is my understanding this is going to be released. Unfortunately, the original artwork it seems not to be around, but that's good. I'm starting to run out of time, I think. What do we got? I got 3 minutes. We're going to do this really quickly. Jeff Alexson, my ex-partner, was not done with the Kaleidoscope Records. Nancy Tells, the heir to them, had passed away, and Jeff bought the rights to the Tiffany Transcriptions. He packed up everything and put them in a storage space in Minnesota where they were at his death in 1996 when it went to his heir, his widow. I believe the masters went to the Country Music Foundation, but for all I know, the rest of that stuff is now in a garage storage place in Minnesota. I do not know what happened to it. This is my ending.
Now, friends, our
this
version
is the Tiffany
of goodbye,
band.
Liza Jane.
Joe Holly, Lewis Tierney, and Bob Wills on fiddle.
Caught a chicken and flew upstairs, goodbye, goodbye. All caught a chicken and flew upstairs, goodbye, Liza Jane.
Oh, how I love her, ain't that a shame? Oh, how I love her, goodbye, Liza Jane.
river and round the bend. Goodbye, goodbye. Six shooters on and gone again. Goodbye, Liza Jane.
Oh, how I love her. Ain't that a shame? Oh, how I love her. Goodbye, Liza Jane.
Rabbit, chase that squirrel, goodbye, goodbye. Chase that pretty girl around the world, goodbye, Liza Jane.
Oh, how will of her, ain't that a shame? Oh, how will of her, goodbye, Liza Jane.
Have your pardon, turn around, goodbye, goodbye. Let your little foot jar the ground, goodbye, Liza Jane.
Oh, how will of her, ain't that a shame? Oh, how will of her, goodbye, Liza Jane.
No bounds.
Dragon, goodbye, goodbye. You can't ride in a little red wagon. Goodbye, Liza Jane.
Oh, how will of her, ain't that a shame? Oh, how will of her, goodbye, Liza Jane. Oh, how will of her, ain't that a shame? Oh, how will of her, goodbye, Liza Jane. Goodbye, Liza Jane.
I have a website, tiffanytranscriptions.com. It has a complete discography and other information about this. Go check it out. Thank you very much.
I think we'll hold questions till after the next presentation, and we'll have time to be able to do that so that we keep ourselves on time.